there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last. I can't remember the last thing that you said as you were leaving, but the days go by so fast. And it's one more day up in the canyon.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about HR with the people that are getting it done. Live this week, we're in Las Vegas, Mandalay Bay at the HR Technology Conference, so definitely follow the Twitter stream at hashtag HRTechConf, and you can follow, be in the conversation. You got a ton of amazing sessions going on. The expo hall is just off, you know, wheels off as far as activity. So check it out, follow the Twitter stream, ask questions. And so we're here, and we got our guest is live. So I want to introduce Kara Yarnott. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Brian, and yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for spending lunch with us. It was good.
Great.
Good to meet you. You were hanging with some pretty sketchy people, but they're very talented. So
yes.
But don't we all, right? That's I guess I was part of that sketchiness, so that would be
exactly.
That would all make sense. So, well, great. Why don't we kick it off and have you just introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll kind of jump into our big question.
Sure. Hi there. I'm Kara Yarnott. I'm the founder and president of Meritage Talent Solutions. We're a talent acquisition consultancy focused on vendor selection, process improvement, and strategy for corporate clients, and go-to-market strategies and design for our vendor clients. And I'm really excited to be a part of the conversation today.
Perfect. So what currently is keeping you up at night about HR?
Oh, there is so much that's keeping me up at night about HR. Personally, for me, it's the pace of change. Particularly in the technology space, there are so many fantastic new solutions and improvements on existing solutions, and I think there were 60-some product launches just here at HR Tech in the last 2 days, that, you know, it's almost impossible to stay on top of everything that's out there, and you kind of feel like you can't learn it all in a reasonable amount of time. And so that really, from what I do to help my customers and my clients, that really does kind of keep me up at night. But places like HR Tech give me the opportunity to visit with as many of those new technology vendors as I possibly can.
And if you would, give a little bit of your background, because you're not just solely vendor. You kind of came from the practitioner HR side of the world. So share a little bit of kind of the background. Give us good context to the conversation, kind of about what you did before starting the company.
Sure. Prior to starting Meritage Talent Solutions, I spent 17 years in corporate HR at a variety of Fortune 500 companies. Most recently, I was Vice President of Talent Acquisition at SAIC, a federal government contractor outside of D.C. With about 40,000 employees. We did about 7,500, 8,000 new hires every year. So I spent the last 7 years doing that, really leading the strategic efforts of moving us into social media, new technologies, really branding the company, which is not something that had been done from an employment brand standpoint before. My career prior to that had me involved at Boeing in college and diversity recruiting. I led that program at Boeing for a period of time. I've actually worked in home building and consulting, and way back in the day started my career at Intel and as a college recruiter for them. So I've been in the space for some time. Don't necessarily like to admit that, but that's the truth.
Well, you definitely must have started in elementary school. So, based on spending a little time with you, it's just not possible to have all that experience and look so young. You have been from, you know, starting, you know, you've been with a lot of, obviously, diverse, lots of different industries, and you've definitely focused in on talent acquisition has kind of been your lane for a long time. And it sounds like you've had to do not only kind of process redefinition, but you've worked with brand. I'm sure you've worked with, obviously, with marketing. You did buying decisions on technology, strategy. So all that being said, what's kind of your response when somebody says, you know, we're not really big enough to do or care about X, Y, or Z when it comes to HR or talent acquisition?
You know, that's pretty common, particularly with the, you know, small and medium size businesses, that, you know, a lot of that we're not big enough comes from the fear of cost. And I find with a lot of my potential clients, as I talk through that with them, you know, understanding where that comes from. You know, there's a lot of pressure on HR organizations as a whole and talent acquisition specifically, because in TA we tend to spend far more money than anybody else in HR to really be conservative about budgets. And, you know, they're not necessarily concerned that, you know, they shouldn't be doing something or they're not big enough for it, but they think the price tags and the solutions are out of their reach. And so it's really an education process to talk through really what are their key drivers, you know, from a talent acquisition standpoint. How are they tying what they're doing in TA to the strategy of their business, and what solutions out there, whether they be, you know, process improvements, strategy changes, or actual engagement with a specific technology vendor that might help them achieve those goals. And when they start thinking about it that way and understanding that, you know, there are a variety of opportunities and options out there in the marketplace beyond, you know, just the really big names that you tend to know in HR technology that come with larger price tags, you, then they start to be much more comfortable with considering, you know, what those options might be.
Nice. So kind of, and I just want to kind of jump into the other side of what you do. So you obviously, you've got a consulting firm. So what are some of what's the things that are keeping your clients up currently at night that you're getting feedback on and probably helping them with?
Well, and particularly this time of year, because for most corporations it's a budget time and they are looking at what they're planning on spending in 2014 so that they can get the commitment from their CFO in a lot of instances for the solutions that they'd like to implement or continue to use. So what keeps a lot of talent acquisition directors up, regardless of size of their company, even if they're a one-person shop, is navigating that process and making strategic decisions about how they're going to use their vendors that they already have partnerships with or new vendors with for the upcoming contract period, whether it be 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, depending on how they're working with their vendor. And what's really happening in every company is the pace of change and their needs in talent acquisition are changing very rapidly throughout the course of a fiscal year. And they are being asked to commit to contracts for a year or longer that kind of lock them into a set of products where they don't necessarily know that those products are going to meet all of their needs across time. So they're taking a very big risk, you know, to even with just a job board by deciding how many resume licenses they need, because come mid-year, their company could have gone through major change or could have been a downsizing. They don't have as many recruiters, or hopefully they could be in great growth mode and now they don't have enough of what they need and it becomes an additional expense. So that really keeps them up at night. And in my days of leading talent acquisition, the month of October was really the time frame where you spend a lot of time trying to figure out and guess in a lot of ways what you might need for the future contract period, or even just, you know, the future 6 months in some cases.
So what's and this next question stems from a conversation with you, and then just a brief conversation with Ray Wang and some of the Constellation folks around average contract period. And so what's your response when you hear that the average contract period is starting to migrate from 3 years, which is probably, it's probably been in place since about 2010-ish, and it's starting to go 4 years and 5 years? What's kind of your response to that?
I really think that, you know, and I'm hearing that that's being driven by the customers, and I think that that is because of the fear of price increases. And talent acquisition budgets, even in the biggest companies out there, rarely increase year over year. Often they shrink. We get challenged all the time, my customers do, to do the same amount with less. So sometimes your budget shrinks significantly year over year. And so the fear is that 2-3 years out, I may not be able to afford the price increases that a vendor might have. So I'm just going to go ahead and lock in at this rate with this mix of products for the next 4 to 5 years. So I have a predictable budget request, which really does save me a lot of strain internally justifying additional dollars.
Excellent. So I want to throw out, a few terms to you and kind of get your feedback, your reaction to it.
Sure.
Social recruiting.
Par for the course, required in today's environment, but you really need to think about what you're doing, that you don't necessarily need to have a presence in every social platform there is, as new ones are created every day. But you need to be where the profiles of the candidates that you are after are, and you need to make it an engaging experience, not a one-way conversation. And that's what social is supposedly all about. And I think in recruiting, we tend to forget about that at times and just start, you know, for lack of a better term, spamming potential candidates out there with opportunities versus really building a relationship.
Great. Collaboration. Terms being thrown around. I mean, that's a constant flow of that term.
Yes, and that one is used all the time. And, you know, the first thing that I thought of when you said that was really encouraging technology vendors in the HR space to be much more collaborative with their clients and their potential clients. You're really bringing those people in earlier in their design and concept process so that they truly understand how a product or tool might be used by the actual end user, you know, whether that person be a recruiter, an HR generalist, a comp person, a candidate, or an employee. There's a lot of great technology ideas out there, but I think getting the collaboration as early in that process as possible really will help vendors make much more effective products.
How about mobile?
Mobile. Yes, this is a challenging one. You know, you talk to so many people in the space, and, you know, it's where everything is going. I mean, you think about the way we all live our lives and how often you do that on whatever mobile device it is that you have, that you need to be able to make things as simple and as easy as possible on a mobile device. And I think the recruitment technology space is definitely moving there. You know, you've got a lot of great vendors out there moving in that direction, whether it be Jibe or iMomentis or all the top bananas and those folks. And but you know, really understanding the end user is the most important part there. And I think that that's what we need to be very conscious of when we go that route, or else, you know, we're going to quickly turn our candidates off to any mobile advances that we try to make.
So let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, it is Brian. We're at a HR Technology 2013 conference in Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. Follow the hashtag, and it's #HRTechConf, CONF, for the conversations here via Twitter. And so let's put on the futurism hat. And I love doing this because you can't really be wrong. That's the best thing about futurism. It's like gambling, and you can't, you know, without losing. It's not exactly that challenging, but it's fun, right? So where do you feel over the next 5 years, 5-10 years, that there are some gigantic opportunities from a talent acquisition innovation space? I mean, where are some places that you're going to be able to make, you know, that you can make a difference. You see a difference happening, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in 5 years, you know, I think I probably predicted this 5 years ago, so it hasn't come true yet, but I really think we're moving away from, you know, the concept of the traditional resume and people really having the, you know, the profile, whether it be through LinkedIn or some other method of, you know, your body of work that also not just includes, you know, the bullet points you put down on a resume, your representation of you, but, you know, what others in the industry, what your peers, what your managers, what your clients have experienced with you, you're really moving in that direction so that folks really have a larger persona than just a piece of paper resume that I honestly think will help reduce some friction when it comes to finding the right candidates and matching people to jobs, because as we all know, you know, there's a list of skills required for a job, and the vast majority of people that apply for those jobs meet those required skills, whether it's a particular certification or a particular set of experiences. But so much about finding the right person is about fit with the organization and fit with the culture. And you can't get that from a resume, but you definitely can get that from a person's larger presentation of themselves and other people's opinions of them and their work. And you know, that's really a kind of a key area that a lot of companies are focusing on, is really ensuring they're hiring for culture fit. And a resume doesn't necessarily help you figure that out. I mean, then you can see a resume, do they meet the requirements, but you're then talking to far more people than you might need to if you had more information about their potential work styles, you know, their management style, if you're putting them in a leadership position, you know, their other activities, you know, their acumen in areas outside of their specific specialty, you don't always necessarily make it onto a resume. So I think as we get closer to whatever that online social persona looks like, I think we start to really focus in talent acquisition on finding the true fit, because if you read all of the studies on the cost of turnover, and, you know, turnover in the first year tends to be, you know, 3 to 4 times higher than turnover of people that make it after through a year with the company. And that's very expensive to replace folks with training costs. And culture fit and fit with your immediate team is so much of a reason that people enjoy, thrive, and stay with the company, that understanding that up front can really help that process.
Nice. And you know what, and I think you did your 5-year prediction. The only reason it probably hasn't came true and it's now a 10-year prediction is because of you know, mobile and social and mobile, I think those two things have changed the real estate that people think about, right?
Right.
And I think that's kind of delayed. I think that's just kind of, it's caused like a little bit of latency in getting there. But I think now, because everybody's kind of redefining how they think about information being presented and the interaction between candidate and company, internal, external, all that stuff. I think we're getting closer, and I think we're speeding up to get there. So I hope that that happens sooner, much sooner versus later on that prediction, for sure.
Yes. Well, and I definitely think you're right there. You know, the pace of change and the pace of adoption of a lot of these technologies has really accelerated, and that will start to move us in you know, all kinds of directions. You know, who knows? You know, there's people out there that are using clout scores to, you know, screen candidates depending on the position, particularly if it's a public facing position for a corporation. And so, you know, other things like that could start cropping up that really help us get that bigger picture.
Oh, definitely. So, war for talent. I mean, I know, you know, you've been in the business long enough that we've been through a few different cycles, depending on the role and the industry and everything, that's what you wake up, you know, in a cold sweat in the middle of the night for, is because there's no way you're going to find the people, right?
Correct.
So what's kind of the next wave? I mean, we're right in the middle of it on some roles, you know, obviously, you know, Go find a mobile application developer, you know, good luck. That's a tough one. But what are you seeing? What are you, you know, kind of talking about with your clients and folks about that?
Where I'm hearing a lot of the fear, honestly, particularly with my clients in the technology space and the engineering space, is with the future supply of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students in the future. Because you look at the numbers, fewer students are completing degrees, fewer U.S. citizens are completing degrees. So individuals that, companies that require security clearances, which is the world I come from where that's a very important part of the process, we're not encouraging students early enough in their academic career. The college is too late to really move into those spaces and help those students understand in elementary school and middle school and high school what careers might look like in those areas. And that really is keeping a lot of my clients up at night. I have friends whose kids are headed off to college that are like, major in engineering. If you could just hang in there, you can do it. It will make a big difference. And I think that's a big fear, for the economy as a whole, for the country as a whole, as well as for companies that look at what is going to be needed in the future, and those skills will be highly, highly sought after, and the supply seems to be dwindling.
So what's your take on actually adding STEM to the body of knowledge within HR? As you go through, I kind of give some context on, like, from a curriculum standpoint, as you go into maybe certifications. I mean, what's your thought on that?
So I think from an HR perspective, we really need to put a lot more emphasis on building those skills internally. Even though someone may have not gotten a degree in a certain area, but really focusing in our L&D and learning and development areas on internal certification programs for our existing employees, or partnerships with universities for bachelor's and master's degrees in the fields that are most important to us, because if every employer is out there going after the very small set of people that are pre-qualified with those skills, clearly we're not going to meet the demand. And while it is a long-term commitment and a significant expense for a company to provide that education to existing employees, I think it's really an area that from a HR perspective, we can have a huge influence in. In addition to that, we really need to be focusing our efforts in our community outreach and our partnerships with schools and universities and in our areas, and really connect with our technologists and our companies that have those careers and those backgrounds, and encourage them to get out into the community and talk about those careers and help people learn about robotics and learn about engineering and learn about computer science early in their academic year. So I think there's a couple of big things that we can really be focused on to make an impact from a seat in HR.
So and kind of to stay along the same kind of lane, what's been your experience with mentoring and maybe the value of it or the challenges with it, the benefits? Share a little bit about that.
So mentoring is a really interesting topic. I'm glad you asked about that. I have been a part of organizations that have very developed mentoring programs that have almost too much regimented about it. You will meet these many times. Forced kind of relationships, and those don't tend to result in a whole lot. I think as HR practitioners, from a mentoring perspective, what we really need to start doing is giving our senior leaders our specialists that may not even be in management positions, but they have very strong skills and knowledge in a certain area, more opportunities to interact with other individuals and start forming those partnerships and mentor relationships a little bit more naturally than the formal matching process and the did you have two conversations about career paths and three conversations about education, and that starts to get a little more difficult. But if you really help you bring those key people into organizations. I've seen clients of mine be successful with making sure their key senior leaders and their key technologists are working with their employee resource groups on a regular basis, whether it be a diversity group or a new hire group or whatever it might be, and forming those kinds of natural partnerships and relationships from a mentoring standpoint versus more formal programs, because those tend to get a little lost in a lot of ways, and people end up just checking boxes versus really forming those relationships.
Nice. What's have you had much experience, and whether you have or not, hopefully you have an opinion on it, what about reverse mentoring?
That is really interesting. About 3 years ago, I saw a presentation. I forget his name, but he called himself the Gen Y guy, and he really encouraged the reverse mentoring. And I have seen some executives who have requested use some reverse mentoring for some from more junior people. A lot of it was around getting more comfortable with technology and mobile technology. What those executives have experienced, the few I know that have reached out to make it happen, is that it really becomes a strong relationship, and it really builds the confidence of the younger employee about their contribution to the organization. It really becomes a great opportunity for the executives to understand what's really causing certain activities and actions. Younger employees, and what do they do to keep them engaged while they're learning and getting more comfortable with some of the newer technologies or the new ways of thinking about how we work. Generation Y is documented as really kind of blending their work and their life together and wanting to be able to work from a variety of locations. And executives comfortable with the fact that whether you are in your cubicle, at a client site, or in a coffee shop, or in your house, that you're still accomplishing effective work.
Well, and just kind of just go a little bit further on that is, and it doesn't have to be like you're an executive and you get a 25 or a 30 year old. I think a ton of the value is the fact that you bring in a former senior leader who has potentially retired but has stayed interacting with the group but has so much of that historic knowledge just there, right, and so much history and has been part of a lot of the changes and iterations. Bring them in to work with some different areas in the company. Because I just had a story real quick, and we've got about 2 minutes left,
sure.
A friend of mine who actually is in engineering, is working on a project, and it's a big consolidation via post-merger, and there's a person that started sitting in on the meetings, and she just wanted to get a little bit of the feedback from that person of what they thought about her presentation and how the project. And she gets in, and she's like, man, I really enjoy talking to this guy. And he was, he's retired and came back in, she figured out. He's like 75 years old. And came back in, and he's like, just all excited. And he's like, yeah, I was with the company for 30 years, and they brought me back in just to kind of be an extra set of hands and eyes and stuff. So I thought that kind of opened my eyes to, wow, that is like just that resource sitting out there that just needs to be taken advantage of and is enjoyable for everybody. So,
well, and I think that's an excellent point. And you look as you look at the size of the generations, and baby boomers retiring, and then you have Gen Xers behind them, and there are so fewer folks in those spaces who are moving into those leadership roles. They really need that institutional knowledge and the history and the support that someone that has been there can provide for them. And I think that would be very smart for a lot of companies to be thinking that way.
Well, that is perfect. Kara, thank you so much for spending lunch with us today. We've got about 45 seconds. Where can folks connect with you? And then we're wrapped up. Great job.
Great. Thank you so much, Brian. You can connect with me on Twitter at KLYarnot, KLYARNOT. And my company website is meritagetalent.com. And if you're more than welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn as well. Just drop me a note telling me you heard me on this radio show, and I would be more than happy to connect with you.
Well, that's perfect. Folks, we're out of here. Back to the conference. We'll talk to you tomorrow.